Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. A 2019 report by the National Academy of Medicine found that as many as half of the country's doctors and nurses experience substantial symptoms of burnout, resulting in increased risks to patients, malpractice claims, worker absenteeism and turnover, as well as billions of dollars in losses to the medical industry each year. Symptoms of burnout among health professionals include emotional exhaustion, cynicism, loss of enthusiasm and joy in their work, and increasing detachment from their patients and their ailments. Clinician burnout has been linked to higher rates of depression, substance abuse, and suicide. And the suicide rate among physicians, for example, is twice that of the general population and one of the highest among all professions. Some commentators make the case that this epidemic among health professionals is not actually burnout, but a form of moral injury caused by doctors and nurses working in a system that causes us to compromise our values and challenges our sense of professional ethics. My guests today, Drs. Wendy Dean and Simon Talbot, have founded a nonprofit organization called Moral Injury of Healthcare, dedicated to the study and advocacy of this phenomenon. Located at the website fixmoralinjury.org, the organization seeks to change the conversation about healthcare. Dr. Wendy Dean is a psychiatrist who left clinical medicine when generating revenue crowded out the patient-centered priorities in her practice. Her focus since has been on finding innovative ways to make medicine better for both patients and physicians. Dr. Dean wrote a recent article for WBUR, Boston's public radio station, about the healthcare challenges facing her husband and how the physicians who cared for him in their local area were hamstrung to provide optimal care because of the system in which they practice. Dr. Simon Talbot is a plastic surgeon on staff at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and on the faculty of Harvard Medical School. He specializes in hand surgery, including hand transplants and reconstructive plastic surgery for wounded soldiers and other victims of accidents and trauma. Fixing moral injury in healthcare is our topic today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Drs. Wendy Dean and Simon Talbot, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd like to start by just having you define what you mean by the term moral injury.
The way we're defining moral injury is that it occurs when you are asked to transgress a deeply held moral belief. And what we mean by that is, as healthcare professionals, we take an oath to put our patients first. And there are occasions now where we're asked to take care of something in the healthcare system, whether it's the insurer or the EMR, the electronic medical record, or even the health system that we work in. And every time we have to choose something as a priority other than our patients, that is an incident of moral distress, and one that adds up day after day, week after week, month after month. It amasses into a moral injury.
So I hear a lot, and I think certainly physicians see a lot in the literature or the lay press even, about burnout, where physicians, healthcare practitioners of various specialties are experiencing burnout, perhaps in record numbers. But this is different than burnout, right? So how do you distinguish between moral injury and just garden variety burnout?
So Wendy and I have thought about this a lot, and recently wrote about this and suggested that burnout is kind of like the end stage. Burnout is when you've gone from these repeated episodes of moral distress to moral injury, and eventually when those all add up, then your various injuries amass to a syndrome of burnout, being exhaustion, depersonalization, and lack of accomplishment. And that constellation of three symptoms of burnout can come from different areas, but in our experience, there are many, many physicians for whom that constellation comes from moral injury.
And so the two of you have co-authored several pieces. The first one that I came across was in a website called STAT, which is a health-oriented news website that's sort of published by the people who run the Boston Globe. And what I learned in reading it was that it was one of the most widely read pieces in STAT for the entire year of 2018. And despite the fact, I think it was published somewhere in the middle of the year. So you knew that there was a wide audience for this piece. So I guess, what's your uptake from that being such a widely read essay that you wrote?
So from my perspective, there are two things that hit me almost simultaneously about that. At this point, first of all, we've had about 275,000 downloads of the article, so it is resonating very profoundly. And what that says to me is that that language that we use, the moral injury concept and framework, is something that people are hungry for. And what we hear very often is people say, this is the language that I've been looking for that accurately describes my experience. And I've been looking for this, for these words for a decade or two decades. But the other thing that strikes me almost simultaneously is how heartbreaking it is that there are so many people who resonate with this concept.
And one thing that I've learned in reviewing this topic is that the suicide rate among physicians is among the highest of any profession, really. Or, and both of you have worked with soldier populations or in the military. So how do you explain that, if you can?
We feel firmly that the stress that clinicians go through, and there are lots of reasons that clinicians have different distress, but this clearly is one key one, is contributing to that. It's very difficult for us to prove it, but when you consider that physician suicide rates are twice that of the general public or even twice that of the active duty military, we have a really worrying problem on our hands. And, you know, we feel that having spoken to many people about this, having received hundreds of stories from people by email, and having had family members of doctors who have committed suicide contact us and tell us that they feel this was a cause, that certainly there is a relationship, and a relationship that is worth investigating and being aware of.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. We're talking about moral injury in healthcare, and my guests today are Dr. Wendy Dean and Dr. Simon Talbot, and together they have co-founded a nonprofit organization called Moral Injury of Healthcare, and you can find out more about it at the website fixmoralinjury.org. And Drs. Dean and Talbot are talking about moral injury as prevalent throughout the healthcare field, as doctors and other clinicians are experiencing moral distress, moral injury, because of situations that are forcing us to essentially cross our own moral values. And I was wondering if you could, either one of you could give specific examples of areas in which, you mentioned the electronic health record, but I was wondering if you could share other specific instances on maybe a daily basis or from perhaps from your own practice where it was care parameters, for example, put down by a hospital or healthcare organization, or, you know, patient satisfaction scores or directives or things like that. Those are some of the things that you've written about.
You know, I think it's important to recognize that the things that cause moral distress and ultimately amassed moral injury in different specialties and different areas of medicine are going to be specific to what area you practice in. For example, a dermatologist is going to have a different experience from an anesthesiologist, and an emergency room doctor is going to have a different experience from a psychiatrist. But there are some common threads, and this is certainly not an exhaustive list. But I think here are some examples. The time that you need to spend with a patient contrasted with the time that you have available. The need to obtain prior authorization, which may be difficult and time-consuming, knowing that a patient absolutely needs whatever test or medication might be out there. The patient satisfaction score, which has a value in demonstrating your abilities and your value in some respects, but may well make it difficult for you to be truthful to a patient about exactly what they need to do for fear of what the patient satisfaction score might turn out to be. The use of an electronic medical record system, which may have a significant focus on billing rather than fundamental record keeping and communication with patients and other faculty, which, you know, takes a lot of time that could otherwise be spent face to face with the patient. And that brings me to documentation, huge amounts of documentation, much of which doesn't add to patient care, but rather detracts from the time that you're actually spending face to face with a patient and developing that relationship. The list goes on. I could mention others, but I think that's a good start.
Yeah, it's deflating just to hear the list. And as you point out, it's specialty specific. Now, Dr. Wendy Dean, you are a psychiatrist and have practiced for many years. And recently, in fact, in January of this year, you wrote an essay, a very personal essay, for a website called Common Health, which is as part of WBUR, the Boston Public Radio Station's website, that was about your husband's health care. And I was just wondering if you could share some of that with us. I mean, he had a serious heart condition, and the care that he experienced by well-meaning physicians who were caught in a difficult situation, you know, sort of resonated with you from the work that you're doing. But it was just such a poignant piece, and we'll link to it on our website. But I was wondering if you could share a little bit about it.
Sure. I think that was probably the final straw that really pushed me to get deeply involved in the physician distress work space. About 3 years ago, my husband, who has a heart condition that he was born with and had done quite well with for 50 years, nearly 50 years at that point, started to feel worse. And over the course of a few months, he went from being a little bit short of breath to being pretty significantly short of breath, and then ended up eventually in the hospital, in the intensive care unit, and needing an emergent transfer. And during the entire course of the several months of his treatment, it was very difficult for us to contact his physicians. It was hard for us, even though we're both physicians, to have direct contact. We were working through a receptionist mostly a receptionist, sometimes the nurse. And then when we were in the hospital, there didn't seem to be a long-term plan. These physicians had just transferred to an employed situation where they were no longer in private practice. They were employed by the hospital. And it just seemed that they had lost their fire to get patients better, to get to any more than good enough. And what I realized in the course of that, and eventually my husband was transferred to another hospital and the outcome was great. He's back to where he had been before. But what I realized in that was we had a very near miss. A two-physician family had a very near miss. And if that was the case, I live in a rural area, it wasn't clear to me that my neighbors, who weren't able to be as powerful advocates as I could be, who didn't understand how the healthcare system worked, who didn't understand which levers to pull to get action to happen, I didn't know that they would have had the same outcome. And that was very challenging for me. And what I saw were physicians whose hands were tied by all kinds of constraints on their ability to practice. They didn't have the autonomy to send people where they wanted. They didn't have the latitude to call in a different ambulance service. It felt like they were handcuffed every time we turned around. And what that ended up looking like was they didn't feel that they were effective, so they had stopped trying.
Wow. I mean,
it was really on the heels of that I decided something has to change.
And I'm glad to hear he's doing better, but it took sort of what amounted to a Herculean effort between the two of you. I mean, he as a suffering patient, but and you as someone with the added education and connections to be able to mobilize, but as you point out, shy of that, you know, a non-clinician, a non-medical care neighbor might not be able to sort of access that level of resource. Now, Dr. Simon Talbot, how did you? You're a plastic and a reconstructive surgeon. You specialize in hand surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital. How did you come to this kind of work?
So my story is very different. You know, I'm very fortunate. I work in a great location with really wonderful patients, fabulous colleagues, and a lot of resources. But as I have gone through my career, I've realized that, you know, over the last handful of years, I realized that I was starting to score pretty high on various burnout scales. My hospital implemented a number of programs to evaluate burnout in physicians, and I looked at my own scores and said, geez, you know, I'm scoring pretty bad on these. And like any physician, I said, well, if this is affecting me, then it must be seriously affecting other people around the place. And so my reaction to that was, I got to do something about this. And so I I went to the literature. I looked up everything I could on burnout, pulled all the articles on it, and I started doing everything they said. I went out and got a physician coach. I put a fridge into my office so I could eat better and make sure I was adequately hydrated. I exercised more, and I did everything that meaningfully was written about. And most of these approaches focused on resilience. Most of them were inward-looking approaches, trying to make it easier to cope with the things that were going on. And there is value in some of that stuff, and there's more or less value for different people. But as I went through this, I realized that I was incredibly resilient, that while these things were helpful to you in the moment, they weren't changing the circumstances that I was in. And when I came back to work on Monday morning and had a clinic in front of me with a whole lot of patients and a whole lot of hurdles to go over, it didn't matter how resilient I was, these things were still in my way and still getting between me and the patient. It was still the things that were making it difficult to care for the patient as I knew they needed to be cared for. And so Wendy and I knew one another at that stage, and we got talking about it, and we realized that although we came about this from completely different directions, you know, me from a plastic surgery perspective and her from a psychiatry perspective and with a very personal bent to her story, we both had this aha moment where we realized we were both experiencing the same problem, and that was where we started to get together and talk more and more about this. And the piece we put into Stat News was very much a sort of a thought experiment. It was putting our ideas onto paper to see, you know, do other people agree with us on this? And I think the overwhelming answer has been yes.
It does appear that way. I'm wondering if, was there a small number of voices that didn't agree, that thought this was maybe taking it too far, or that it doesn't correlate moral injury with the kinds of suffering that goes on, for example, in the military with surgeons who've seen combat action and things like that, and suggest that somehow the health profession is different? Or is it just so overwhelmingly that you're finding concordance with the view?
I think that there are always some people who will want to change parts of the language that you use or parts of your argument. And we've tried to really listen to any of that feedback and think it through and incorporate it into new writing. But the vast majority have been in support of this concept. And we try very hard to make clear that we are not trying to compare physicians to service members or to the military physicians who have been deployed and been in combat. They're two very different things. But what is similar is not the experience that we have, but the impact that it has on us. And in the military, typically those incidents happen. They're profound experiences, they're few experiences, and then they're over. With medicine, with how medicine is right now, it tends to be multiple smaller incidents of moral distress that add up over time.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guests today are Doctors Wendy Dean and Simon Talbot. They are co-founders of a new organization called Moral Injury of Healthcare, which you can read more about at fixmoralinjury.org. And Dr. Talbot is a plastic and reconstructive surgeon in Boston, and Dr. Dean is a psychiatrist living in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And how did the two of you first come to work together?
We were, part of my practice is research, and the research that I work in is primarily in hand transplantation. And at the time, Wendy was working with the Department of Defense and involved in some of the administrative aspects of Department of Defense funding. And so we spent a lot of time talking to one another about, you know, funding and development of how we proceed with taking care of our wounded warriors and hand transplantation, among other things. So it was one of those just purely chance meetings that we both had a similar feeling about this, and yet we're working on other stuff at the same time.
And I think I'll just add in that I think it was just coincidence that I happened to be working for the Army at the time when the Army recognized the suicide rate that they had, which was about 22 per 100,000, and that was alarming to the military, and so they made a big push to identify the risk factors and to mitigate that. And the office that was in charge of all of that research was literally down the office from me. And it got me curious about what the physician suicide rate was compared to that in the active duty military.
I see. Wow. Very interesting how you both came together. So what do you see as solutions to this crisis of moral injury in healthcare among doctors who have so many constraints placed upon us? Dr. Talbot, you shared with us many of the resilience strategies offered by well-meaning institutions, the places we work for, our medical societies that talk about meditation or mindfulness or, of course, things that I would say are truisms. It's important that we eat right and exercise and get enough rest. But as you point out, it doesn't change the underlying problem. So what are some solutions that you've proposed thus far?
Thank you for asking that. I think Wendy and I have thought about this in several big categories. And I think the overarching framework is trying to align the incentives between the different players, whether it be patients, clinicians, hospital administration, insurance companies, and even our healthcare system, so that we're all rowing in the same direction. And our incentive is aligned to be fundamentally good patient care. I think that's the overarching framework. And I think there's three big categories that you can think of to try and get that to happen. The first is getting back to valuing the clinician-patient relationship. This means revisiting our healthcare delivery system, and that's an entire discussion on itself. And that's not to say there's one system that we believe is perfect, but I think we need to look at the way we deliver and care. We need to look at the information technology systems we use so that they're about patient care and not so much about billing and metrics, but really about communication and about facilitating patient care. And we need to focus on the way that administration is used in hospitals, so that, again, administration is about patient care, not about the other aspects peripheral to patients. Number two, I think we need to focus on really valuing our clinicians. That means having fabulous leaders. That means having leaders who are completely committed to what's going on, and that means having leaders who are talented as leaders and also know what's going on at the front lines, who are still practicing in ways that they're aware, and if they're not directly involved, that they're coming down and seeing what's going on, and educating clinicians also to push back and tell their stories and say no where there is demands that are against the best interests of themselves and their patients. And then finally, organizing and coming together and being a community, so that when these discussions come up, and parenthetically, as physicians, we're not great about doing this, but getting together and being a voice to say, we really need to get back to patient care, and we're all committed to that together, so that, all the aspects of this system, whether it be policy, insurers, hospital systems, or whatever, are realized that there's a big push to focus on patients again.
So I realize it's early in the formation of your organization, and you've only proffered these ideas relatively recently. But do you think you're gaining traction with them? Or I guess one question specifically is, how effective is organized medicine? And by that I mean the medical societies, whether they be state or national bodies or local chapters. Are they responding to your message, or at least the rank and file membership of those organizations?
So we have gotten a lot of positive feedback about this, and we've actually had at least one place that decided to organize their initiatives for the year around those three concepts of valuing care, valuing physician relationships, and building community. And they have, in fact, successfully pushed back on one initiative. And so it's a small start, but that's where it all begins. Is at the local level, if it's local and personal, and there can be some small wins that can build on itself.
Now, recently, the two of you appeared in Boston I don't know if it's based on, but the essay that you wrote, Dr. Dean, for WBUR presaged an event that was held there in February, sort of a panel discussion about moral injury in healthcare. And I guess I understand that there were some other folks, physicians, but also non-physicians, who were on stage to share their stories, and that this was a relatively sold-out event.
it was a great opportunity for bringing folks together to have this conversation in a public forum, to really have that public conversation. It was patients, it was physicians, it was retired physicians and active clinicians. It was a very robust conversation, and we did have a primary care physician with us on the stage, and also a family member of a patient who had had difficulty getting some of the equipment that she needed after her surgery. She told a powerful story about her mom's challenges, which also resolved themselves in positive. The outcomes were okay, but medicine is hard. Getting good care for patients is very hard these days, and it would be nice if we could make it not quite as difficult.
Do you anticipate doing more public style events or more scholarship or I guess both?
We're up for both. We don't have any more live events planned at the moment, but we're hoping that that will pick up. Again, it is early in the evolution of this organization. We've been around for about 15 months, but it is amazing how much traction it has gotten and how much people really feel like this is the expression of their experience.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking on this this issue, because it resonates with me personally as someone who has had a career in healthcare, and I think that you're onto something very important, and I commend you for really taking this head on, because it seems like a very heavy lift, but the response that you've had makes it seem extraordinarily worthwhile. But of course, you know, changing the structures of healthcare is something I feel as though many people have tried to do. Certainly political candidates talk about all the time. But I mean, talk in that realm seems pretty cheap. But do you have any optimism around political fixes, or do you think it has to come from a more grassroots level?
I think it has to be both. I really think that this is as we say often, this is a problem that we can't fix on our own, and we are going to rely heavily on both clinicians and patients to help us move this mountain. But I do think that both from a grassroots level and from the top down, it's possible to make these fixes.
Doctors Wendy Dean and Simon Talbot are co-founders of a nonprofit organization called Moral Injury of Healthcare, and you can learn more about it at their website, fixmoralinjury.org. Doctors Dean and Talbot, thank you so much for joining us.
Our pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.